Welcome to the Jewish Lives Podcast, a monthly show by Jewish Lives, the prize-winning biography series published by Yale University Press and the Leon D. Black Foundation. I'm your host, Alessandra Wallner. Today, we're looking at one of America's most influential screenwriters, Ben Hecht. In the second part of the show, I'll sit down with Adina Hoffman, author of the Jewish Lives biography, Ben Hecht, Fighting Words, Moving Pictures. If you like what you hear, rate us on Apple Podcasts and leave a friendly review. Thank you in advance. You can learn more about our books at jewishlives.org. Join us as we explore the Jewish experience together. Ben Hecht. You may or may not know that name. But Hecht was one of the most influential American screenwriters of the 20th century. Born in 1894, Ben Hecht was a literary phenom. He began a lifelong affair with words in Chicago. The 1910s found Hecht a reporter by day, a novelist by night, and a central figure in the Windy City's literary scene. In the 20s, Hecht turned to theater, co-writing a smash hit newsroom comedy, The Front Page. But in the 1930s, Hecht veered in another direction. He began writing for Hollywood.
You don't know this man. You know only science. You know his mind, but you don't know his heart.
We are speaking of a schizophrenic and not a Valentine.
Listen, Walter.
Listen, I made a great reporter out of you, Hildy, but you won't be half as good on any other paper, and you know it. We're a team. That's what we are. You need me, and I need you, and the paper needs both of us.
Americans.
Those lines may sound familiar. They're from Scarface, Spellbound, and His Girl Friday. Just three of roughly 140 films Hecht wrote, co-wrote, or edited over the course of his remarkable career. But Hecht didn't rest on his laurels. He used his celebrity to speak out against anti-Semitism and later in support of Zionist attacks on British forces in Palestine. Ever the provocateur, Ben Hecht's fame may have diminished since his death in 1964. But look closely, and you'll see his ink-stained fingerprints all over Hollywood and the seminal events of the 20th century. Discover a vibrant portrait of one of the most accomplished and prolific American screenwriters by award-winning biographer and essayist Adina Hoffman in Ben Hecht, Fighting Words, Moving Pictures. Save 25% plus free shipping for a limited time only. Use code HECHT at checkout. Only at jewishlives.org. Hi, Adina Hoffman, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We'll start with openings. Your book opens with a quote from the legendary French film director Jean-Luc Godard. He essentially said that Ben Hecht invented modern film, which is very lavish praise. What drove that perspective?
Oh, well, it might have been true. I mean, it's obviously a bit of an exaggeration, but Godard said, that Hecht was a genius who invented 80% of what is used in Hollywood movies today. And I guess, I mean, Hecht, in a sense, you know, he was a screenwriter who not only wrote scripts that had his own name on them, but was responsible for doctoring and tweaking and advising on hundreds of movies. And in a sense, not just helping to bring into being some of the greatest movies of the Hollywood, you know, of Hollywood's golden age, but really almost to create entire genres. And he didn't do this alone. Obviously, there were all kinds of screenwriters who don't get the credit that he got. But, you know, the gangster film and the newspaper movie and screwball comedy are all genres that really owe a lot of what they are to Ben Hecht.
And you write in the book about a distinctive quality that he brought to all of his work across genres and mediums that you described as Hechtian. Can you tell us what that was?
Sure. I mean, I think it's important to say, you know, we started off talking about the movies, and he probably would actually not be very happy about that, because in a lot of ways, the movies were the thing that Hecht got the most credit for and was most well known for in his day. But they're certainly not all that he did. You know, he was also a journalist and a playwright and a novelist and later on an activist. And in a way, all of those things he did with a kind of Hechtian gusto. You know, in a sense, I mean, to sum it up, and obviously it's complicated and I wrote a whole book about it, so it's not something you can put in just a few words. But if I were forced to, there's a kind of, first of all, just sheer energy and delight and wit that lie at the heart of everything he did. There's also a certain pugilistic quality. He was a tough guy. He liked to pick fights, sometimes for the sake of those fights themselves. He loved language, and language was a weapon in his hands, sometimes a weapon used playfully, often a weapon that could also do real harm or cause injury. And so all of those things, I'd say also a kind of perversity was often present, so that, in fact, to go back to the question of the movies and how he felt about them, not only was not the thing that he, the only thing he wanted to be remembered for, he actually claimed to have great disdain for the movies, and said all kinds of horrible things about what the movies had done to the American psyche and whatnot. So this too is part of what he was up to. And it really, you know, even though he was involved in all of these different kinds of activities, there is a sort of through line, I think, that runs through them in terms of all of those things that I just described.
And you did just mention a couple times how he felt about Hollywood, and I would say the word is contemptuous, but he was hugely sought after as a screenwriter. So what was that about?
Well, he was really good at it. I mean, it's a complicated thing. I think, first of all, I think we need to take with a really big grain of salt this contempt, because that's the attitude he sort of peddled. He made a great display of saying how stupid the movies were and how easy it was to write a script. And, you know, he allegedly, you know, tossed off some of the most important movies of all time. You know, Scarface, he allegedly wrote in about a week. You know, maybe yes, maybe no. So I think you have to not always take him at his word. He's a great self-mythologizer also. So I do think actually that he took a great deal of pleasure in terms of writing these movies and being around all these people and the making of a movie. But I mean, He was a man of words. Words came easily to him. You could even say he was a bit of a graphomaniac. So that, you know, he got his start as a newspaper man in Chicago, and he was having to write on deadlines very quickly, and he was quite fluent. And that talent he brought to Hollywood, and he wasn't alone. There were a lot of screenwriters of that period who had a background in newspaper work. But it wasn't just that he was fast. It was that he was kind of brilliant at it. And there's a kind of irony at work in Hecht's whole body of work, in the sense that the things he took most seriously and considered, you know, that these would be his lasting legacy, the novels, and those, in a sense, are really not especially lasting. They're not novels that I would highly recommend that anyone go seek out today, whereas the movies are, on the whole, incredible and some of the greatest movies, you know, Hollywood ever made.
Before we move off the topic of movies, you touched on the fact that he liked the process of screenwriting. Can you tell us what he liked about it and why that suited him?
First of all, I think he was a great collaborator. I mean, in the sense, in the better sense of collaboration. We're not. We can get into some of the political stuff later. But he loved to be working with other people, to be in a kind of constant, highly energetic conversation, and to be, you know, and this was a part of his wit, you know, to be tossing things back and forth. He and his playwriting and screenwriting partner Charlie MacArthur had a way of working that was really a kind of playing. They worked together. You know, Charlie would lie on the couch and Ben would pace, or maybe it was the other way around. I can't remember. remember, but they basically just would toss the stuff back and forth. And it really was a kind of play, but it was a very productive kind of play. And so there was that. And I think in terms of Hollywood, being in Hollywood itself, he moved back and forth between the West Coast and the East Coast. Not his home was in Nyack, New York for many years, but he'd spend these stints on the West Coast. And I think he just loved, you know, he loved parties and drinking and women. I mean, there's a lot of womanizing going on too. And in a way, these things all sort of flowed into each other. I mean, he wasn't, maybe some of that is also, at some level, he was a workaholic. I mean, I think the partying was sort of a part of it, but he just loved to be in this kind of crazy, almost, he describes a kind of madhouse situation, or almost like a firehouse, actually, where, you know, people are you know, flying down the pole and the phone is ringing off the hook and everything's going on at once. And this somehow for him, because he was a kind of a juggler. I mean, I describe him that way in the book, as someone who was always juggling a bunch of different things. He'd be writing a novel and writing three scripts and, you know, he's got five more ideas and he's also having an affair and his wife is back at home. He's always doing all these things at once. And somehow that fed his creativity. It's a little hard, obviously, to account for what makes someone so good at what they do. But for whatever reason, he thrived in that kind of chaotic environment.
His life kind of resembles some of his screenplays, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. No, I do think the screwball thing, his own life had a kind of quality of a screwball, not only a comedy, there's a lot of tragic stuff too, but in a very real way, I don't think it's that far from the sort of the thing that people associate with Howard Hawks movies, many of which were written by Ben Hecht, the sort of people talking over each other. And that is actually the way, I believe, that he talked and joked and drank with his friends.
And what are your favorite Ben Hecht scripts?
Oh, wow. That's one of those hard questions. I mean, he really, you know, he's credited with something like 140 scripts. And so to pick, I mean, obviously there are some truly, you know, great movies like Notorious, directed by Hitchcock, and but also, you know, 20th Century, which is a wonderful movie, you know, a comedy with John Barrymore and Carol Lombard and you know, directed by Howard Hawks. Scarface is also a Hawks movie that's and a Hecht movie, one of his early great big successes. As I said, he sort of helped to invent the gangster movie. And actually the movie that precedes, I mean, Scarface is probably one of the most important and wonderful, truly brilliant gangster movies ever made. But even before that, Hecht's very first movie is also one of my favorites. His first Hollywood movie was a silent movie, actually. And it's a movie that he allegedly, again, tossed off very quickly. You know, he left town as soon as he wrote it. When he later saw what had been done with his movie by the director Joseph von Sternberg, he was absolutely horrified. And it's kind of ironic because the movie is Underworld and it's one of the great movies of all time. It is probably the earliest, I don't know if it's the earliest gangster movie, but it's the earliest great gangster movie. And it won Hecht the first ever Academy Award given for best story. So I'd put that on the list. Design for Living. I mean, the list goes on and on. And it's also important to say that there are movies that he, as I said, he didn't get credit for, but that he had a major hand in. You know, Gone with the Wind is a movie that Hecht pretty much is, many writers wrote it, but it seems pretty clear that he pulled it together in some critical way at the end. There are movies that he also directed that are not major movies, but they're really interesting movies, like The Scoundrel with Noel Coward, and Angels Over Broadway is a wonderful movie with Rita Hayworth and Douglas Fairbanks Jr. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's kind of, but those are a few. We'll start with those.
Great. Well, to your point, you do an amazing job of explaining his significance both in Hollywood and beyond. And so I just don't understand, and maybe you can help us understand how it's possible that someone who was such a powerhouse in his day isn't known to contemporary audiences, or for that matter, me before I read this book.
Yeah, well, it is one of the sort of mysteries. And it's something, first of all, I would say, that just the sheer multiplicity of what he was involved in and with, the fact that he did so many things, I think makes it hard for people to sort of, even in his own day, to get a handle on, like, are you a novelist or are you a screenwriter? Or are you actually an activist for the militant underground in Palestine? I mean, who are you? So there's that. That's one side of the explanation. The other side, I think, has to do much more directly with his relationship to Jewish things, to the Holocaust, first of all, which really, you know, Hecht was obviously Jewish, but he claimed retrospectively that he became a Jew in 1939. And in the book, I question that date, and I think it's not true at some level. But obviously what he meant was that something was stirred in him by what was going on in Europe, and he felt the need to stand up and make a very strong statement about how he was a Jew, and he wasn't ashamed of it. And I think he was really sort of pretty very outspoken in his condemnation of American Jews who he felt were afraid to call themselves Jews. And I think that made a lot of people very, very uncomfortable. There was a sense that he was like not minding his manners almost. And, you know, they had ads that they took out in the newspaper sort of almost accusing people of letting Jews die. And then it got even worse because after the war ended, he became very outspoken in his support of basically the Jewish terrorist underground in Palestine. And so, I mean, if you take all of these things together, I mean, these are all reasons why he has sort of been either forgotten because who remembers the screenwriter, or sort of his memory has been repressed because there was something uncomfortable about what he was saying.
You mentioned a little bit of you mentioned a lot of his activism in World War II. And I'd say one example of his pugnaciousness and his outsizedness is the production he staged and wrote for Madison Square Garden called We Will Never Die, which was seen by 40,000. What kind of professional risk was that for him?
Actually, I would say that in this, you know, given everything that Hecht did in his life, I don't think that was too risky at all. I think by that stage, that was actually one of the more sort of respectable things that he did. You know, the stuff that was getting him in trouble were things like these ads that he and this group of activists were taking out, in which they would say, for instance, for sale to humanity, you know, genuine human beings, $50 a head, like that kind of in your face black wit in the face of the Holocaust was shocking.
And I wanted to ask you to say a little bit more about how his particular brand of propaganda made certain stances about Palestine and the emergent state of Israel possible later. Can you say more about what you were thinking of?
So the thing that, I mean, we were just talking about what was respectable and what offended people. So the thing that got him into the very biggest trouble of all was a particular ad he took out in which, at this point on the ground in Palestine, they were having a kind of rebellion in which they were blowing up rebellion. I mean, it was a terrorist campaign. They were blowing up British trains and buildings, and it was a kind of a war. And Hecht took out an ad in the newspaper to the terrorists of Palestine, and he called them my brave friends. And he basically said, I'm summarizing, but basically every time you blow up a British train and you wreck a British, you know, arms depot, the Jews of America make a little holiday in their hearts. He was willing to sort of be very outspoken in this way about what was going on.
And taking into account all that he did across all of these areas, how do you think he would have wanted to be remembered?
That's a hard one. I mean, I've wrestled with this question, and I don't know that I have a good answer. I mean, in a way, you know, he was involved with, as we've said, so many things, you know, and he certainly wouldn't want to just be remembered as a screenwriter. That I think we can say for sure. But I think in a way, you know, he lived this larger-than-life life. He also, I mean, we haven't even talked about the fact that he knew everybody. I mean, his memoir, his 1954 memoir, is a wonderful book, and it's called A Child of the Century, and he really was a child of the last century. He was friends with colleagues, with enemies, with everyone. I mean, it's remarkable. Everyone from, you know, Groucho Marx to Carl Sandburg to, you know, George Grosz to Kurt Weill to David O. Selznick and on and on. And I do think that his life, in a sense, maybe as described in that incredible memoir, is what he might like to be remembered for. I mean, his life as it was completely entangled with his work. He was, as I said, a workaholic and someone whose work is fascinating and is so much of its time or its times. I mean, he actually lived really across the whole century so that it's not just one period. So I don't know that he would exactly want to have been remembered as someone who had lived a great life, but somebody who somehow put himself on the line and put himself right at the center of history as it was unfolding in the course of his lifetime.
Well, maybe this little talk can help reestablish his place in history. And one more attempt at that, the final question I have for you is, if you could speak to Ben Hecht, what would you ask or say to him?
Well, you know, at some level, I feel like Ben Hecht and I have been arguing with each other throughout the course of my writing this book in a good way, in a productive way. I mean, I started out when I wrote it knowing that I disagreed with him deeply about a lot of things, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to do it. But that was actually part of the fun of it. This was a book that took shape almost as a kind of screwball comedy in the sense that, you know, the man and the woman on the screen are often at odds, and that generates an awful lot of, you know, hopefully if it goes well, it generates sparks and funny things. And I do feel like that's the place that this book came out of. So I don't have one thing that I would say to him, except that he's wrong about a lot of it, but that he's been wonderful to spend all this time with.
Thank you so much, Adina Hoffman, for talking with us about your book, Ben Hecht, Fighting Words, Moving Pictures.
Thank you.
The Jewish Lives podcast is made possible by the Leon D. Black Foundation. Special thanks to our partners at Yale University Press, Jewish Lives editorial director Eileen Smith, series editors Anita Shapira and Stephen J. Zipperstein, managing director Rebecca Keyes, and to Linda Brennan and Ruby Elliott Zuckerman. The Jewish Lives podcast is hosted and produced by me, Alessandra Wallner. Our music is composed by Barry J. Cohen. Groucho Marx once said, "Outside of a dog, a book is man's best friend. Inside of a dog, it's too dark to read." Watch for forthcoming Jewish Lives titles, including Bugsy Siegel. Learn more about our books at jewishlives.org.